Welcome to Loud and Clear, a podcast dedicated to amplifying the voices of women in music. I'm your host, Olivia Adams, and welcome to our series called YXC Divas, the artistic voices behind the Saskatoon Symphony Orchestra's upcoming show. As part of this series, I'm interviewing each of the solo artists featured in this show, and we're releasing episodes as a lead up to the big event. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to chat with Sonia Reed Noble. A pastor's daughter with a story to tell, Sonia Reed Noble started singing and playing piano at the age of 8 in church. Her talent and dedication led her to earn a Bachelor of Arts in Music at Redeemer University College and to work professionally across Canada, the United States, and the Caribbean. Sonia's performances are energetic, soulful, and passionate. The last 30 years have been spent focusing on performing and providing high-quality vocal coaching to singers. For the past 25 years, she has taught vocal lessons to students of all ages, inspiring them to become musically confident. She believes music must first resonate with the artist to have a powerful impact on their audience. You can find Sonia Reed Studios on most social media platforms and her website, soniareedstudios.com. Welcome. I'm so excited to chat with you today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm just really excited to get to chat with you. So this is good.
Well, I like to start all of my interviews off with the same question. And that is, what led you down the path of becoming a musician?
I was able to recently actually go as far back in some memories that my family had for me. And one of the memories that was written down in a journal for me said that even as a baby, I would try to sing along with the radio. And it was funny to find that out recently, whereas of course, yeah, it's been decades, right, of music instruction and performing. And I would say it started at home. Like it really did. My parents were open to, you know, like I would listen to things back then. It was on the record player. I would listen to the radio. And of course, church, my involvement in church was really encouraging. There was pretty much an expectation that if you were young, you were going to get up and do something. So, so it became like, okay, well, I think I'll sing. How about that? And, you know, and then it built from there. It grew from there.
Well, your style as a musician has been described as this sort of cross-genre blend. So gospel with R&B and soul. I wonder, can you talk more about how you came to define your style and that cross-genre blending? Because as you were saying, you started singing in church. That was sort of the origin story. Can you talk about that?
It's a little funny, to be honest. I spent a lot of time in church. And when I lived in Southern Ontario, I was able to work in church. And I don't mean as a worship pastor. I mean, churches in the communities and in the GTA were always having concerts, you know, productions. So getting that work as a musician was quite readily available for someone like myself. And when I moved to Saskatchewan now 13 years ago, the things were changing in church. There was no longer the special singer. Mm-hmm. Detail that we used to always have where you know, when I first started, it would be, you know, the special singer came in and they had their soundtracks on a cassette tape or, you know, whatever. And then, and so it was evolving to where we are now, where you have more of the worship band and a more of a group setting in what's mm-hmm. happening in the service. So at that time, when I moved to Saskatchewan, thinking I'd only be out here for 1 year, you know, I realized that things were changing and also that I was in a different environment. Saskatchewan churches didn't operate exactly the same as I expected them to. I mean, that's fine. Different environment, different ways of operating. And it became very clear to me that if I wanted to keep singing, and because I do really work at my skill set, I needed to branch out a little bit. And when that became clear, you know, I came out to Saskatoon and it was like, you got to sing at the basement. I was like, well, if I go to the basement, what am I singing at the basement? Like, I'm not bringing a worship set. So what are we doing? Right. So, and I had to get to a place where, having come from a very conservative background in the way that I thought about my music, I basically came to a conclusion where it was like, I'm a grown married woman. I can sing about love now, people. Mm-hmm. It's okay. And honestly, that's how this happened. It was not that I had sung R&B and soul in the past, but I mean, 90% of my work was gospel related. But then I moved out here, went through the transitions and changes that I did, and I was able to start incorporating R&B and soul as very much like a part of my storytelling journey. It's been great. Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. that journey, it's sometimes when we look back, I think we're like, oh yeah, I can see exactly how that's happening. But then when we're in the middle of that, it feels so disorienting. So I wonder if you could talk about that. What was it like going through all of those transitions?
I would say at times I thought I was questioning my faith. Right. And so there was definitely that disorientation that came with that was like, am I still really truly representing what I think or what I believe? And the reality was, yes, I was still representing the fact that love between a man and a woman, or the stories that we tell in these other, in, you know, dancing with someone you love or hating someone that's really hurt you. That's a part of who we are. Yeah. And so that disorientation started to move towards clarity when I realized that this was all I was getting the opportunity to do was tell more about, talk and sing more about life.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Rather than feeling like I was just not doing the right thing. There's no really truly right thing in this. Yes. This art allows us to express ourselves fully. And that's what moving more so into R&B and soul did for me. So now when I think about songs like singing a Whitney tune, when I just think, oh, I just wish I could be all that she was as a vocalist, but like these lyrics, right? These songs, you know, that you sing and you're like, yeah, this was how somebody has truly felt in a moment. And maybe even I did in moments in my life. So
It's just more about sharing like the human experience.
Human experience.
Rather than siloing all of these ideas.
Yes.
Yeah. As a researcher, I'm like in what's called like interdisciplinary music research. And I've attended several panels on interdisciplinarity and research. And everyone's just like, every musician is an interdisciplinary musician. And I was like, this is true. Because we like to say like, oh, there are these silos, like I'm classical or I specialize. And sure, there are things that we specialize in. But, you know, we're so many things over the course of our life.
We are. I mean, I was in a gospel environment for the first portion of my life in the sense of always being in church and growing up, you know, and that was my outlet. So that's where I even learned different styles. I learned a little bit about rock in the church. I learned about reggae. I grew up in a Caribbean church, right? As a community. So learning about reggae and soca was very much a part of my existence. But then I went to school and I went to a completely classically oriented environment. And I had started classical training prior to that. I mean, that's how I was able to get into the program, obviously, in that I had experience and I was doing my RCM, you know, I was doing grade 8, grade 9, grade 10 work. And it was great. It was fabulous. But the irony of my experience in university was that every day I was going back home to a gospel, soul and R&B environment. And so here I was learning these arias and learning all kinds of things and, you know, singing spirituals in a classical style. And then I would go back home and I'd listen to Mahalia Jackson or something, or the Winans or whatever, CeCe and, you know, BB and CeCe and all these other artists that had a completely different interpretation of this music. And I believe to this day that it was one of the best things. It was hard. Don't get me wrong. It was very difficult because the setting that I was in university and because I was doing classical studies, what I came from wasn't always welcomed because at that time we still had the mentality of classical being right. It was the only way to sing. You know, gospel music was just a lot of yelling or whatever the thought was, right? But now who I am today, that friction has made me the artist I am today, and I have no regrets. Right. Yeah.
Do you feel that there is a shift happening culturally in which, I guess, more in like the music world, that there's a shift happening culturally on like classical not being the end all be all?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. As a vocal coach, I'm also in teacher forums, right? As well. So these discussions are coming up quite regularly. And recently, I remember there was an article that came out and it was a classical perspective of like a Billie Eilish performance or something. And we were like, are we still really doing this? Are we really doing this? Like, are we really trying to sit back and go, well, her technique is not what we think it should be, so it's wrong. No. No. As a vocal coach, what I love that I get to do is an artist, and I call every one of my clients an artist because that's what we're doing, right?
That's what they are.
They are. They absolutely are. So they come into my studio and I'm like, what do you want to sound like? What do you hear yourself sounding like? Yeah. I am not here to define that for you. And that's what I love seeing evolve over the last few years, especially where these discussions are becoming, no, classical is not always right. This is not the Bible for singing. This is not the Bible and be all for music and musicality. Who you are as a musician is entirely about who you are. And I love it. I love experiencing people when they are these artists that just get to be who they authentically are without feeling that there's rules that decide if they're valid or qualified.
Absolutely. 100%. And I know Karen Garrelis's work, we had her on the podcast a couple years ago, and her research found that the younger you call students artists or musicians, the more that they see themselves as one.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I see it. I don't work with a lot of younger clients these days, but over the years, I mean, it's been 25 years of coaching now. So there were times when I predominantly work with younger people. And there is something about the energy and their authenticity that they want to bring to what they do in their music, right? Mm-hmm. And so why wouldn't they be an artist? Because they're creating something that is fully about how they feel. I could have two or three different seven-year-olds walk into my studio back to back, and every single one of them will have a distinct, purposeful rendition of the same song, per se.
Yeah.
And I just find it like amazing. I'm in awe watching how when we give them permission to be an artist, they truly do become one.
I couldn't agree more, because I mean, even in my studio, we don't have like, this is a classical stream and this is the jazz stream. Like everything's music is music is music.
Exactly.
And I make all of my students learn improvisation techniques, and we're all practicing improvisation. And this is just part of being a good musician is learning to improvise, right? And one of my students told me, she's like, well, I'm not an improviser. I'm like, well, have you tried it? And she goes, no. And then, you know, we're playing around. So we're doing lots of improvisation. And then after a bit, she goes, you know, I've changed my mind. I think I am an improviser.
Right. It's like, wait a minute. I can go off script. Yes, right. You can.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I love about this realization we're coming to in the music industry, that one isn't right and one isn't wrong.
Absolutely.
Try it. See how it feels for you. You can decide if you like how it sounds later.
Totally.
But give yourself that freedom to be like, maybe I hear something. And I my way of describing it to some of my clients is, do you hear something in the air? Do you hear something in the environment? Mm-hmm. And if you hear that, what are you going to do with it? Just try it. Just see if what you hear is going to come out of your mouth or not. Try it.
Right? I love that.
Well, and the thing is, it gives them agency.
Yeah, that's the key.
That is the key, because it can't be that you walk in and that it's about what somebody else decided you needed to be.
Yeah.
We just can't keep doing that. We can't. So, yeah.
Yes. And I'm hoping that because that's affecting the artistry, that's also going to help change the pedagogy.
Yes.
Of the way that teachers are learning how to teach. Mm-hmm. We're allowing for more of that student-led learning. Merlin Thompson calls it democratic learning.
Yeah.
It's like you have agency, you have choice in that matter.
You do. I actually are currently in another program. So I did this certification in something called the NeuroVocal Method a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I love it, because our brain essentially sings before we do. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, but the whole concept is just what you were describing. There is, when we can feel what we're singing, or, I mean, I'm going to use singing as the premise here. When we can feel what we're going to sing first, the ability to bring that to life becomes exponentially greater. Mm-hmm. And as I've worked through this program, I'm currently right now working through training to be licensed to teach other teachers this method. Mm-hmm. And the one main key in how it is that we work with a client is, well, how does that feel to you? Do you like that sound? Because I'm not here to decide that. I'm not here to be the one that decides that for you. So yes, like I completely agree. I've in many areas of my life right now, musically, it has become very apparent that when I empower people to be true to themselves as an artist, it brings amazing results. So yeah.
I love that. That's amazing. Well, I wonder if we can backpedal just a little bit and go back to, you're talking about your faith background and how it might influence, like how it influenced your music, and then also how you sort of moved away from it. But you also have an album that's all gospel music.
It is.
I was wondering, can you talk more about how that background influences your songwriting?
Well, songwriting for me is something that I have to work at. I will say that up front. I actively have to be like, okay, we're going to write something. I admire artists that are able to just roll these lyrics out. It amazes me. I have always found that songwriting has been easier for me in the sense of context of my faith, because it's just, I live it out. I think it out every day. Mm-hmm. And that was what one of the main influences was in putting that album together. As always, I look at that album and I think, okay, we got to do something better. Cause you know, as artists, we tend to look at what we just did. Go, nope, got to change it up now. Something different.
Yeah.
But the songwriting element of that, it really helped me to sit down. There's one song in particular on that album that is it's titled Complete. And it was very much so about my own walk, my own life. And having dealt with a lot of situations where I had felt rejected or I had felt, you know, really isolated and alone, my faith is where I found some security. And that's how that influenced that song, as well as others on the album. But that one in particular, really, that's where that came through, is I just needed to know that I was okay, because I was, you know. Mm-hmm. Life sometimes wants to make you feel really isolated and alone, and you're not. You know, there are moments where you can see it clearly that you're not. So the songwriting element definitely has been influenced more so by my faith, and just, I find that to be the easier place for myself to write from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you're writing music, do you tend to do it in, like, do you ever write in a group setting? In, do you write with a band, or do you like to write more or less in solitude?
I primarily have been writing in solitude because I think I'm too scared. Just like, I don't think anyone else wants to know. I may not, it may suck. No, in my own fears, my own insecurity, but I do like the solitude of just working by myself. But then once I feel that it is somewhere that I can need to build on, like, say, bring in, yeah, how are we going to arrange this? Mm-hmm. What do I need to make adjustments to this melody? Then I will absolutely sit down with other musicians and start to develop it there. But lyrics and melody are very much myself, just myself. And I like that.
So then when you have the lyrics and the melody and you're bringing it to a band, can you talk about what that collaboration looks like? Do you have certain people, like certain artists that know your style that you work with in your band, or what does that sort of collaboration look like?
Absolutely. That collaboration is very much, and I'm going to mention his name because I feel like the world needs to know about him. He's a friend that has become a brother to me, Jonathan Hutchinson, and he is a keyboardist and producer here in Saskatoon. Mm-hmm. And we have very similar upbringings, but he was in the UK, I was in Southern Ontario, and we both ended up in Saskatchewan. And here we are going, really? You know, when it comes to the art in the sense of the style, and the gospel threading that I like to feel and the freedom that I like to feel in my music, I always take it to Jonathan first. And then he's able to better interpret, you know, relay this to the band. This is how, because I find that as a singer, yes, I'm very much in my own little singer bubble a lot. I know what I want it to feel like, but I do collaborate with Jonathan to make sure that the rest of the band doesn't go completely crazy trying to understand what Sonia is trying to convey. So...
Really, do you have a band that you consistently work with? Like, you've got your band that you're always with?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I do. They are my primary, and it is Jonathan Hutchinson on keys, Kyle Kreisa on drums, Jent Laird on bass, and Ian Martins on guitar. And these guys will follow me anywhere. And by that, I mean the gospel influences in me are very strong. So even when I'm singing R&B and soul, I might just hear something else and move off in that direction.
Yeah.
And they thankfully are really good at what they do. And they are able to stay with me, do the improv with me, and have fun doing it. So yeah, I'm really grateful for them.
Well, and it needs to be that flexible when you're playing in a band, because depending on the room and the environment and the audience, it's going to affect how that show goes and where you want to take that song.
You're right. And I think there were many years where I felt it was hard. Because I was working with musicians that could not comprehend that if it was not already on sheet music or on their chart, then it just couldn't happen. But they were very skilled musicians. So I learned very quickly that it was not about their skill level. It was about the mentality.
Yeah.
And they felt that maybe they just really felt that there was a level of insecurity there and vulnerability that they were not going to be okay with. Mm-hmm. But I come from an environment where vulnerability was always the deal. And when you grow up as a child in a church where, you know, Sister Mary is going to get up and sing a song and you have no idea what she's going to sing or if it's even going to be in a key that actually exists, and you're sitting at the piano, what do? You learn how to follow.
And absolutely.
That was the difference. I had this training that was not officially training, but it said, whatever happens, you're going to be okay and you will make it work. So now, even in performances, there's really nothing that can happen short of an explosion of some sort that phases me. The sound system can go down, whatever. It doesn't matter. because mm-hmm. I've been trained that we move, we can be flexible and we can evolve in the moment. So that applies to my music. When I'm singing something, it could be a Stevie Wonder tune. What if I'm just gonna, you know, the other day I was singing Knocks Me Off My Feet, and I just love to sit in the chorus at the end and just riff on that. The mm-hmm. guys never know if I'm going to stay there or not. They wait to see. What's she going to do? Do we end the song? Oh, wait, nope, there's the cue. Yep, nope, she's going to stay here. Yeah. And then we can have fun with it. Why not? Right? So, yeah. I really do appreciate the flexibility and just the improv that they afford me to be able to just be myself when I'm performing with them. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I was wondering, is there a song, you already talked about Complete, but is there a song that really stands out to you as one that was influential or pivotal to your career or just even to you personally as an artist?
You know, I was thinking about that and I do very, very clearly remember, I mean, and it may seem a little bit cliche, but it did impact me when Whitney Houston redid Dolly Parton's I Will Always Love You, mm-hmm. right? Because if you could master that song, you were then deemed as somebody who could sing. And, you know, because it took so much and Whitney had this way of making it look completely effortless. Mm-hmm. And so there was something about the demand of a song like of that nature with the arrangement that she did that said, hey, this is something to aspire to. Mm. And I, over the years, that's always been in the back of my mind, like, you know, and now I can sing it and I can have fun with it and, you know, and perform it for audiences and have people ask me to perform it. And I love that. But it really was significant for me in hearing, even in that song, when you hear the breakdown, boom, and you go back into the end, can you handle that? Can you be open and stable enough to bring that refrain in and not be hesitant and not have your voice crack? Man, that was the ultimate goal for me. So.
I love that. That's great.
It was cool. It was definitely a process.
But having that sort of song to aspire to, like that caliber, mm-hmm. that's beautiful. And then to be able to master it, yes, you know, and to be able to sing it. And then you get to communicate those skills to other musicians. So that's awesome. Well, you've got an upcoming concert with the SSO.
Yes.
And I was wondering, what is it like to get to perform with an orchestra? And can you let us know what you'll be singing?
Yes, I want to tell you, I've been so excited and honored that they would even have considered this because it's not typical, right? Mm-hmm. Someone of myself who stays in what we call microphone genres, in some cases, most cases, is typically not working with orchestras necessarily. So to have this opportunity, I'm very appreciative of that. And excited because when I think of the arrangements of the two songs, so the two songs that I'm performing are The Impossible Dream, and I'm also performing an arrangement of a Whitney tune, I Want to Dance with Somebody. And
love it.
Right? So I am really looking forward to just hearing more strings and other instruments mm-hmm. behind that. It's going to be wonderful. So I will do my best to be performing and not just sitting back listening to the orchestra. So, you know, just being that close. I'm excited.
Do you ever do you get say in the orchestral arrangements or will it be like MIDI tracks them. And then
I've left it to them. So I know what key I'm singing the songs in and I know what songs I'm singing mm-hmm. and it actually doesn't faze me because again, you know, you go into the environment and I allow myself to feel in here and let my brain do the work. And it'll work. Yeah.
Amazing. It's going to be such a great show. Mm-hmm. You know, Equal, who is a hip hop artist, mm-hmm. you know, we've got Eileen Laverty, who's folk, and like we've just got this beautiful mix of performers. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an amazing night. Well, what are you working on? What's next for you?
Well, I am working on performances for my clients. Part of what I get to do is give them opportunities to perform. Mm-hmm. So that is my next big project. I have one coming up this month. And then in June, I have another one where I actually have my band come in and play for them. So they get to experience like a full band. So it's cool. So those tend to stay pretty high on my priority list for myself as a performer. I am actively looking at getting back into some writing. And I just want to figure out if that's going to be what genre, right? Like, cause it's mm-hmm. sort of funny. As you know, in our discussion, it could be very gospel oriented, or maybe now's the time to write a love song. So that's what I'm thinking about. Yeah.
I Love that. And how cool for your clients to be able to perform with your band. Like,
Oh,
that's just
it's
an amazing experience.
It's cool.
That's
It is
amazing.
really cool. Seeing them light up and when they get to that moment of like, oh, I did it. That is everything. That's everything. So it's so cool to see. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so cool. It's been such a pleasure getting to chat with you. I feel like I could talk with you all day. For the sake of time, we're going to wrap up our chat with a few rapid fire questions. I'm asking everybody on this series, no wrong answers, go with your gut.
Okay.
Can you point to a moment when you knew you were going to be a musician?
Yes. I was 9 years old, and no surprise to anybody listening to this podcast, I was singing in church. And I just distinctly remember there's a feeling as an artist and as a musician where, and everyone I believe has had it, you are singing or performing on whatever instrument you play, and you have that moment of fulfillment and completeness. And I knew it.
Yeah.
And I was nine. I knew
That's
it.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Well, what is your desert island album?
Oh, Lord. That would be...
It's a Whitney album. No surprise. I can't even think of the title. I'll have to get back to you on that one.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah. It just left. It's gone.
Well, we know that Whitney will be there on the desert island.
We know
if
that
ever
on the
happens.
Desert island. Yeah. Absolutely.
Do you have a pre-performance ritual, and what is it?
You know what? It is solitude. I need the quiet time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I need the quiet time. It helps me to calm my nerves and to get really focused about what I'm doing. So I do actively look in the midst of makeup and hair and whatever, is my outfit going to work and survive this evening? You know, is everything stitched and staying, you know, is when, even if I just have to sit in my car,
mm-hmm.
like it's quiet. It's having a little bit of quiet time. And then of course, warming up. Those are the two main things for me.
Yeah, of course. Well, if you could give one piece of musical advice to a fellow musician out there, what would it be?
Mm-hmm. Be true to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Do not feel that you have to line up with anybody else's requirements. Sing, play, perform how you want. Be authentically you.
I love it. Well, thanks for coming on Loud and Clear. Do you mind letting our audience know where they can find you? And I'll link to everything in the show notes.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you. They can, and you can reach me on via my website, soniareedstudios.com, and on Facebook and Instagram, Sonia Reed Studios.
Amazing. Thanks again for coming on and talking with me. This has been great.
Thank you, Olivia. This has been wonderful.
And that is going to do it for this episode of the Loud and Clear podcast. Don't forget to please leave us a rating or written review on your podcasting app of choice. It really helps others to find our show and to help us continue making this for you. I am so enjoying getting to bring you these conversations from the incredible artists from Saskatoon. Saskatoon, again, is my hometown. I live in Ontario, but my heart will always be part of the prairies. And so it's just been wonderful getting to talk with the amazing talent in Saskatoon and to bring you the voices behind the YXE Divas show. So don't forget to tune in next week. If you are subscribed, that new episode will drop right in your podcasting app on Tuesdays. And if you're not subscribed, maybe now is a great time to hit the plus sign or follow on your podcasting app, and you'll be subscribed to hear our next YXE Diva. Thanks so much for tuning in. My name is Olivia Adams. This is Loud and Clear, and you can find me at oamusicstudios.ca or OA Music Studios on social. Bye for now.